You're listening to Sound Money from Casey Research.
Hello and welcome to the Sound Money Show from Casey Research with me, your host Andy Duncan. It's my pleasure today to be speaking to David Dreeman, Chairman of Dreeman Value Management and author of the revised and updated Contrarian Investment Strategies, The Psychological Edge. Today we'll be talking about security analysis, cognitive psychology and the efficient markets hypothesis. Hello, David.
Good afternoon, Andy.
Now, some people, such as Warren Buffett, are famous for making use of Dodd & Graham's 1934 book, Security Analysis, and its many mathematical lessons, whereas you're more famous for using cognitive psychology and behavioral finance to help design your investment strategies. What do you think's wrong with security analysis?
There's not a great deal wrong with it. The problem is that most people can't follow it, including some really outstanding money managers. What happens is that we, if we could follow a Graham and Dodd as if Warren Buffett does, or follow their methods and then actually develop new ones as he's done, there'd be nothing wrong with it. But the problem is that when we tend to stray away from the guidelines that Graham and Dodd gave us, and if we get excited during a bubble, I think Benjamin Graham said, for example, that he would never buy a stock more than, I believe it was around 15 times earnings, and yet when we had the internet bubble, we had stocks trading at, I think the average company, large company on the NASDAQ 100 was at over 100 to 150 times earnings. So the valuation was something like almost 9 to 10 times as high as it should have been. And the analysts still bought the stock. So even though they had been probably schooled in Graham and Dodd and conservative analysis, they're simply unable to follow it in a period of euphoria, or and the same is true in a period of panic when stocks go to very, very low prices. Most people can't bring themselves to buy them.
So you think the fear and the greed just takes over even if somebody has a really good plan?
Right. It's fear and it's greed, and actually there have been a couple of Nobel Prizes awarded in the last 15 or 20 years to cognitive psychologists who show that there are other factors involved. For example, there's an effect called the affect effect, and what that does is if we really like a stock, we can pay as much as 100 times its real value, and likewise, if we dislike a company, we can pay possibly just a fraction, maybe a tenth or a fifth of its real value. So there's nothing wrong with the rules other than they have not been, most people and most professionals haven't been able to follow them over the years. One point that shows this is that the former head of Vanguard showed that in any 10-year period, about 90% of managers underperform the market. And if you go to 15 or 20 years, it's even more than that. And that's why index and funds have become as popular as they have over time. And again, that all traces back. The psychological factors make it very, very difficult for the great majority of even experts to break away from these psychological influences.
Now, one of these first psychological influences that was identified was called the madness of crowds, and this was used to explain events in tulip mania in Holland in 1637. Now, there seems to have been an increasing number of bubbles and panics in the last 20 or 30 years. Do you think this is caused by psychological effects like the madness of crowds, or do you think there is some other explanation?
You know, I think there was a book written back in, I think it was 1845, called Extraordinary Events and the Madness of Crowds. Of course, they didn't have the psychological influences, or they did not have the experimental research to show these influences at the time. But it really, bubbles tend to repeat, and they're all very similar. If anything, bubbles have gotten, they're far more frequent than they were, and they're larger than they were. For example, the South Sea bubble that you mentioned lasted less than a year, and we took up stocks maybe 10 times from their original value. In the internet bubble, some of these internet stocks were up as much as 100 times or more, and the riches to be gained from the internet were just thought to be unlimited. In fact, AOL, which is a very, very popular stock at the time, it subsequently took over Time Warner for a while, and I figured out going back to the late 90s that for it to have the price it had, it would need 18 billion subscribers, which is roughly three times the population of the Earth at that point in time.
Now, you said that security analysis that works if only people would stick to it. And much of derivatives pricing is based upon efficient markets hypothesis, which states that everything that's known about investment is already in the price. Do you believe in the efficient markets hypothesis?
No, I've been a strong, disbeliever, probably a critic of it for a large period of time. It's won quite a number of Nobel Prizes over time. I guess the most important came from the University of Chicago, but it's been universally accepted. The problem, though, is it really goes to the heart of what we call the even current economic theory, and that is that we're all omnisciently rational. We don't make mistakes. It's almost a theory from the past. We know from psychology that people, because of these influences, and they've been shown statistically time and again, make a lot of mistakes over time. And, you know, the overvaluations of stocks or enormous overvaluations or undervaluations are a byproduct of this.
Now, from your book, Contrarian Investment Strategies, could you summarize then three psychological effects, or three or four, which people should look out for when they're investing themselves? What should people do to avoid being trapped by their own psychology, do you think?
It's very, very difficult, even for trained experts, even with behavioral finance backgrounds. It's hard, but because these influences are very, very powerful. They're backed up by the experts we respect. They're backed up by large groups of people who are knowledgeable. And most of all, they're backed up by rising prices. But one of the things that we go back to a Graham and Dodd approach in the sense that we only buy the out-of-favor stocks. So we never pay more than 10, 12 times earnings. We buy the bottom 20% of the S&P 500, for example, for large capitalization stocks, or the bottom of the Russell 2000, the bottom 20% of the Russell 2000 for small cap stocks and so forth. And what we found over the years, and one of the well-respected efficient market professors did a study on the contrarian strategies, and he found that they outperformed the market every decade since 1950. They won't necessarily perform better every year, and there's a good chance they can't, underperform for a couple of years this time, but it is the truth that they have outperformed the S&P over a very extensive, it's now almost a 60-year period of time.
Speaking of the current S&P, do you think the general U.S. stocks kind of situation is good? Do you think stocks are still a good inflation hedge? Or do you think that we're currently in a pre-bubble bursting situation?
No, I don't think we're in a bubble right now. We're certainly not in the environment we were in the late 1990s. And stocks were knocked down very, very sharply in 2007 and 2008. And if anything, I think that inflation actually benefits stocks. We can go back in time. We remember the rampant inflation in Germany in the 1920s. And in fact, the mark dropped to one billionth of its value. And yet the German stock market more than made this up, and it was up with the U.S. market. Or another example would be Brazil right after World War II. The real went down to a billionth of its previous value. Yet if you look at the Brazilian stock market, it's totally adjusted and is for this inflation and is up well ahead and is almost in line with, say, the international markets and the U.S. market. So I think inflation has always proven to be a major positive for stocks over time. Maybe not at the beginning of an inflationary spell, but you know, within 6 months or a year, stocks tend to do a good deal better than inflation.
Do you think the current financial system as managed by the Fed is working, or do you think it should be reformed? And if it should be reformed, how do you think this should be done?
That's a very good question. The Federal Reserve stood by under its governors Greenspan first and then Bernanke and let a lot of this happen through the housing bubble that we had. They did everything they could to encourage the bubble to continue. Bernanke saw the dangers after the markets crashed and did a very, very good job of actually printing money in the first few years. You know, they're in totally uncharted water, and I think that not only the Federal Reserve, but there hasn't been a paper currency around that hasn't had huge inflation since we went off the gold standard in 1914. I think it's inevitable. We haven't seen it yet because the banks have had to up their reserves and really are not lending a lot of the money they're borrowing out. I think we're moving through that, and I think when that passes, we will probably face much more inflation than we're facing right now.
Just quickly, when's your outside time horizon for that inflation coming?
I would think anywhere from, say, 2.5 years to 5 years. I think we'll start inflation probably within 2.5 years, and within 5 years, I think it'll be much higher.
Well, it's been fascinating speaking with you today, David. Where can our listeners find out more about your investment services?
Well, we have a website. I think it's dreamin.com, and we have quite a number of different types of products, all stock products that use contrarian strategies, ranging from large cap, small cap, mid cap, to international.
Thank you for your time today, David Dreamin.
Oh, thank you very much.
Subscribe to Sound Money Radio on iTunes. You can also visit us at caseyresearch.com/sound-money, where you can subscribe to our mailing list and listen to all of our podcasts. If you enjoyed the show and learned something new today, please tell your friends all about us to help us grow this podcast. Finally, a special thank you to David Dreamin for joining us on today's show, and thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.